Brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio. How are you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, and I'm getting jazzed about tonight. We're going to go down to the Phillips Arena and watch the Dream play, and we're going to interview some execs with Association for Corporate Growth. Is that right?
That's right. They're doing an event at a luxury suite, so we'll be broadcasting live from the luxury suite at the Atlanta Dream.
Which is nothing new for you. I know you guys do luxury suites all the time, but I'm used to being in the cheap seat, so I'm excited. I don't know if I'm going to be able to keep my mind on the interviews, but I am looking forward to it. How do you guys eat in these luxury suites? Is there like the boiled shrimp and all that stuff?
You know that. That's exactly what will happen.
Well, this is going to be a fun segment on Results Matter this morning. We have a studio full, but first up on Results Matter, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from Georgia Oak Partners, Mr. A.D. Frazier. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How was your behavior? You had a good morning so far?
It's good so far. Can't go any place but down. Let's go.
So give us a little bit of an overview, if you will, Georgia Oak Partners. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
Georgia Oak Partners is a private equity investment company. We make investments in small businesses, particular target market segments, to encourage them to grow. So we back solid management. We back businesses that are very interesting. We're not the typical slash and burn type of opinion you have of private equity. We're more focused on growth capital.
How did you know that we had that opinion?
I just took a wild guess.
So, you know, a lot of private equity firms, they put in the money and then, like you said, it's kind of a slash and burn relationship. It becomes almost adversarial. How does your firm, it seems like it's more consultative and you're really invested in their success.
We are. And we try to become partners with the owners as opposed to adversaries. We look for companies, and Georgia is our focus. We're trying to build businesses in Georgia, build jobs in Georgia. So we're investing in companies, small ones, cash flow or EBITDA of $2 to $5 million. And through those investments, help those companies and their management grow. We're not bound by any particular hold period like other private equity firms are.
Right.
They generally look at 3 to 5 years, generally three. So the only way you can actually make a return in 3 years, if you think about it, is to cut costs.
Right.
To be more profitable. So that's why we've abandoned the notion of primary hold periods. And all of our investors feel the same way about investing in Georgia companies that we do. So there's a commonality of interest on the part of the owner, part of Georgia Oak, and a part of the people who are actually producing the money.
Now, there's part of a reason a company gets private equity is because they want some of the Rolodex and their brain power to fill some holes in their, maybe in their management. Do you guys add that as well?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. Our thesis involves A, growth funds or financial capital, and B, intellectual capital. So if you look on our website, and I hope you will, you'll see a number of pictures of people who are experts in various fields.
Right.
And that should give you a hint as to the kind of businesses we're going to be investing in. So, for example, we have an industry expert in logistics, and our first investment last year was Team One Logistics, headquartered in North Fulton County. The most recent investment was in a pizza franchise that we think has a lot of potential in Athens, Georgia. So these are both businesses that will expand throughout the state and all across the Southeast, and we'll probably end up doing a couple more this year.
Now, so it seems like these two industries are very disparate, so you don't have a sweet spot?
Well, the sweet spot is Georgia and traditional types of businesses, backbone economy. The reason we like the restaurant franchise, if you look again, we have an expert, probably the world's leading expert on franchising, who's a member of our board of advisors. So we wouldn't be investing in the franchise business if we didn't have an expert who really knew what was going on and could provide additional intellectual capital to the owners.
So now when you're out there looking for businesses, how do you find them?
Well, in the South, which is an underserved market for private equity, as I think everybody knows, if you have a business in Adel, Georgia, and somebody comes down from New York or comes up from Boca Raton, you're probably going to want the sheriff to throw them out of town. These are companies that are generally under the radar scope of larger out-of-state private equity firms. So we source them ourselves. Mike and I go around the state and visit lawyers and accountants and people who are possibly interested in investing with us. And the deals we've surfaced, and there are a number that are in the pipeline, we've all surfaced ourselves. So it's a different approach, and we think we can add value if we keep local. Mm-hmm. And I think the focus on economic development for the state is also resonating around the companies we look at.
Now, the pizza company, how did that catch your eye?
It's a zippy concept. This is a segment of restaurants called fast casual. There's mm-hmm. fast food like McDonald's, and there's casual restaurants where you sit down and take an order. This is more on the Subway's model, where you actually walk in and build your own meal. Fresh ingredients, all natural, all some organic. And the pizza is cooked in 5 minutes right before you get to the end of the line. So you come away with a freshly cooked item, salad, soft drink, or whatever you want. And generally people will eat there right in the store.
Now, how did they get on your radar? Did you go in there?
They got on our radar because the fellow we have, who is our franchising expert, right. was looking around at various franchising businesses that we might like to look at, and he found this one. Your Pie is the market leader in this fast casual pizza business around the country. We have 17 existing stores.
So there's 17, and they're based in Athens?
Yeah. Headquartered in Athens. In fact, the founder is a young man who saw an Italian pizza on his honeymoon and liked the way they made the thing and liked the process. So he brought it back to Athens, mm-hmm. Where he's just graduated from the University of Georgia, which is a great idea because what place better than college towns to
right.
have
yeah,
a pizza
store? Right, yeah,
it
makes perfect sense.
And it's a reasonable price, and it's a value product, and people like it. We're in several markets in Georgia now. Our next big one will be Atlanta, where we're not represented at all. So we're looking forward to doing that. You'll see that happen this year.
So I have a senior at UGA, and I can tell you that's a very solid investment. I can tell you from personal experience.
I had two on the payroll for a long time also.
So what kind of mistakes do you see over and over from organizations that are looking for private equity? I bet they make some of the same mistakes over and over.
Well, not so much a mistake as it is an owner who doesn't have a vision for growth. If you find someone who's making a fair amount of money but is running it like a lifestyle business mm-hmm. and really isn't interested in taking it to the next level, then we probably are not a good fit for them. On the other hand, people who are really interested in expanding aggressively will find us good partners.
Now, what's your methodology? Once you've kind of narrowed down, somebody gets on your radar, then you guys, the partners, get together and probably have regular meetings to decide what you're going to invest in?
Yes. There's two of us who are partners, and we have some others on our team. But the basic point then is once you have an agreement mm-hmm. That we want to consider something, then we sign a non-disclosure on both sides, mm-hmm. and we will gather information from them, financial information, market share information, personnel information if necessary, balance sheet. All these items are called due diligence.
Right.
And the due diligence is what we do between the time we put them on the radar scope and either decide to go ahead with it or decide not to. And we have turned some down. So that's the next step in the process. And that can take 2 months to 6 months. We don't have a particular time, but depending on the complexity of the organization and its financial structure.
Now, do you like to be the only investor, or are you okay if the original owners have other investors?
Well, other than the owner, who will keep a significant portion in each case, we trust. Mm-hmm. Our company will likely be the only outside investor, but we'll bring individuals together under the Georgia Oak banner. So it's not just our money; it's our investors' money as
right.
well. But we like to be the only one other than the owner.
Now, what if there needs to be other additional rounds of funding?
Well, that's not uncommon. The particularly if you decide to add another bolt-on acquisition to build up the company you bought. So we go back to our original partners and ask them if they would like to add up some more money. And if they don't, then we have the right to go outside and find additional investors.
But you still are the exclusive.
Yeah, Georgia Oak is the investment cohort.
Right.
Is the one that is the only other investor than the owner.
Now, you said that you're not necessarily tied to the 3 to 5 year exit that most private equity firms kind of like. So you're in for more of the long haul?
We are, and that's unusual, but not unique. I mean, Warren Buffett does the same thing at a much larger scale. But our exit doesn't – our investors are not institutional funds. They're individuals or family offices or high-net-worth individuals whose outlook is a lot longer than just 3 years and out.
Right.
When you buy a company and the clock starts ticking the day you buy it, then you know you're going to have to sell it, and from that moment on, you're going to engage in every single strategy you can to get profitable as fast as you can. Well, just think about Coca-Cola being given 3 years to double its
right.
earnings.
Right.
It's not going to happen without
right.
working on the cost side. So what we like to do is encourage the owners. Most of the time, our money is used to help the owner take some chips off the table and to invest in growth for the operation, where there might be additional CapEx or additional resources needed.
Now, how did you get involved in the private equity business?
Well, I spent most of my career in finance one way or the other, except for the time during the Olympics and either asset management or senior lender. But I chaired the tax council for the state of Georgia in 2010 and went all over the state, met with hundreds of people and a lot of people in smaller towns particularly. Felt like there was no financing resource.
Right.
A lot of local banks closed down. A lot of people got skittish about making loans, particularly large investment loans. So it came to my belief that we needed a private equity firm focused on Georgia companies first.
Right.
Now, we'll do more than that later, I trust.
And like you're not, there are businesses like this pizza company is going to sell outside of Georgia at some point.
Well, yeah, well, they're opening franchises all over the Southeast, and
right.
that'll be the focus. But the headquarters is here.
Right.
And the same is true with Team One Logistics. We have over 500 drivers in 26 states.
Right.
But the headquarters of the operation is here in Georgia, and that's the focus of the business. So we're interested in growing Georgia GDP and helping companies grow as well.
Now, when you did this tour of the state like that, did you really get a chance to talk to these people and see that they are really struggling when it comes to getting money?
Yes, it was. We were asked to recommend some tax changes to the legislature, which we did. Most everyone agrees now that it's a complex package, but it was pro-growth, it was good for business in the state. My business partner, Michael Lonergan, who is a pro in this business and has been in it for 12 to 14 years, including U.S. and overseas, actually had done was a Georgia guy, grew up in St. Simons, went to University of Georgia, worked out of state in a couple of private equity businesses, and knew that the typical private equity approach wasn't going to go over in Georgia. This is just not the way we operate. It's a more relationship-oriented operation. There are more people who are going to be – you need to have your reputation checked out with some other folks around.
Right.
So it's just a different style of doing business. And it's more compatible, we think, with the Southern culture and relationship orientations as opposed to adversarial relationships.
Now, do you find that – so when you're choosing businesses, you're choosing businesses that are more relationship-oriented?
They have to be. There has to be two hands clapping because if we're not turnaround guys and we're not trying to invest in distressed assets and some of the things that the other larger companies do with institutional money. Our approach is got to involve a thoughtful manager who's interested in growing, who has a lot of energy – and is willing to spend the time working with our dough.
Now, what's it like?
No pun intended.
Now, what's it like when you're with all your other buddies at private equity funds and, you know, they have a more traditional approach of, look,
well,
you got to exit. What are you talking about here for the long haul?
We'll either find a strategic purchaser or we'll dividend the company out or recapitalize it.
Right.
There are lots of things you can do that don't necessarily involve slash and burn. there are a number of nice private equity firms around Atlanta. You mentioned the Association for Corporate Growth, I guess, or ACG. We're part of that, and that's a good bunch of people. Now, the problem in the South is that there's not enough private equity investment to get the job done.
Right.
And that's true in Georgia as well. Last year, I was on a task force with the Lieutenant Governor, and they passed a bill to encourage a Georgia-based private equity match with the state.
Right.
It was a strategic victory. It'll take them a while to get it set up. But this is specifically aimed at doing the things that North Carolina and others are doing now, where the state has an investment fund, and it'll invest alongside private equity investors in assets. Well, it's just another stamp of the fact that this is a private equity-friendly state if you have that kind of a state government association.
Well, and also, it doesn't help in the what it gives kind of validity to whatever the concept is. If their own state's investing in it, you're not waiting for somebody from California.
Well, that is such a good observation. That's exactly right. And I think there have been numerous times, when Georgia bids businesses have lost out because North Carolina had its name on the deal.
Right.
Now, those things can cut both ways, as you know. But it is indicative in the minds of most of the companies who are looking at for investors of a real serious interest in their company.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and have a conversation with you or someone on your team?
Well, Mike Lonergan is our managing principal and is chief investment officer. So you're going to want to remember his name. It's Lonergan. But we're on our website, www.georgiaoakpartners, one word, georgiaoakpartners.com.
Now, and you're looking for companies?
Yes, we're looking for companies and investors. And I've tried to outline for you today the sorts of investors we're looking for.
Right.
And the sorts of companies we're looking for.
I think you did a good job.
The analysis that Mike had done, and that's when we got together, showed that there was a heck of a demand in Georgia, just statistically, for this type of thing. And I'd seen it firsthand, face-to-face. So that's how we got together.
Yeah, it definitely fills a need, and to have that long-term approach is refreshing because we talk a lot to technology firms, and that's not usually the conversations they're having.
Well, and it's so nice to have the energy focused here in Georgia because we do talk to a lot of folks, and we hear maybe horror stories is a little bit of a strong word, but of people, you know, going west to get the money, and we have all this great innovation happening here, and then the
and
west
is frustrating.
I'll close with this. we have one of the best incubator programs in the country at Tech and other places. It's a shame because many of the things that come out of there need venture capital. That's early stage investment.
Right.
That's not what we do.
Right.
We're capital. Our guys are cash flowing when we buy them and so forth. But the high tech funding, by and large, is get this Boulder, Colorado, and Silicon Valley.
Right.
They've put together a little ecosystem of financiers who like to do business in the tech area and who understand it, which I don't. But when the time comes to fund it, they say, "Well, if we're going to put dough in it, you need to come out and have an office right where we can keep an eye on you." So that's what happens.
And most
of the companies who we fund in the tech and the incubator system end up someplace else.
Right, and that's like a double loss. You lose the revenue of the company, and you lose the brains that come along with it.
And you lose the investment that we made, the state made,
in training these people to begin with.
Support.
Right.
Well, A.D. Frazier with Georgia Oak Partners, it's been an absolute delight having you, man. You got to come back and get us caught up on new
bring one of your companies. We'll talk to that pizza company.
I think you'd get a bang out of that because I've gotten a chance to look at more companies in detail in this than I have possibly done otherwise.
Right. I'll bet. Hey, listen, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Of course.
Okay. Next up on Results Matter, we have with us past president with AWSCPA. Boy, that's a mouthful. Let me see if I can give it a whirl. Atlanta chapter of the American Women's Society of Certified Public Accountants. I just got the yes nod from her. Please join me in welcoming to the show Miss Janet Young. How you doing, sunshine?
I'm doing fabulous.
Did you learn anything in that last segment?
Ooh, that was a lot of accounting, finance.
Right up your alley, right?
It got me on my tiptoes.
So past president, you didn't get impeached or anything, right? Your term was just up.
I actually was raised up to the national level. I'm now the national vice president of membership. So,
oh, wow.
But It's a great.
I'm sorry. I didn't know that we had more theme music for you.
It's okay.
So what are you guys doing for folks?
Well, we are an affiliate. It's part of a national organization. And basically, we are just a women's organization, but we do networking. We do a lot of mentoring and education. That's our goals.
Now, what are some of the challenges for women in accounting?
Oh, boy, don't get me started. Well, I'll give you a statistic. 50% of the graduates out of college are in accounting. So they enter the workforce and they do pretty well up to senior management. Mm-hmm. But once they get to senior management, that percentage goes down to 21%.
And why do you think that is?
I could give you lots of ideas, but, women have to develop as leaders. And, my good friend Ann Cash says it's because they're not taught in sales. But mostly you don't know what, when you should speak out. And with AWS CPA, we encourage leadership. We encourage everyone to get involved and to speak out and to have ideas.
Now, isn't the CPA world changing in that at one point, as a CPA, you were in charge of just doing kind of the work of an accountant, and now sales is more and more important?
Oh, I think sales is such a big part of it. I have my own practice. I do IRS tax problem resolution. Mm-hmm. And, without the sales, you're not going to get it. I mean, Right. You could be totally qualified, but if you don't know how the buttons to push or how to reach that client,
and build the relationships, right?
Build because the relationships.
You get in there maybe to do a small part of the work, and all of a sudden you build a relationship and you're getting more and more of the work.
Exactly.
Now, is that part of what you do, is teach the women to be able to do that more efficiently?
I think, we do a lot of continuing education. And mm-hmm. We try to segregate it to, we have estate and gift. We do tax. We've actually had the Honorable Douglas J. McKinney has come spoke mm-hmm. to our practitioners. So what we do is we reach out to all segments of business to come talk with us.
Mm-hmm. So how often do you get together?
Well, we get together every month, but except the 3 months of January, February, March, April. 4 months we don't get together.
4 months.
And I know those months.
So is it Margarita Monday, Tequila Tuesday?
There's probably a reason for that timing, isn't there?
It's probably a coincidence.
Probably so, yeah.
Well, we do get together on the 16th. And we come in our pajamas and sweats. And right. We've all gained about 15 pounds. So
now, in your career, how important has this organization been to you?
Well, I think it's been important. I never saw myself as being president. I'm the anti-president. I'm the anti-CPA. I'm a little different than the group. But for me, it was their relationships with me, them letting me guide them to – we did a marketing plan. We are actually having a 30th anniversary picnic in Piedmont Park this weekend.
It is 30th anniversary.
Well,
wow.
It's 30th anniversary, but we got an extension, so it's our 31. Yes, I'm an amateur comic. And so we invite all women that want to be CPAs to come down. It's free. It's being catered by Ebony and Ivory and Marietta.
Now, do you find that women have some preconceptions of what it's like being an accountant that they don't really understand until they're in it?
That's pretty good. You come in and you have to do your time. That's mm-hmm. that's how accounting is. You do your time. A half hour, a half day is 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. That's a half day in public accounting. And you come in and you do that till you pass the CPA exam, which from what I understand is a lot harder now. So you decide, you really can't be a generalist. So you need to come into specifics.
Uh-huh. Does it take some people a little longer to kind of get that? That they have to really be focused on a niche?
I think you walk away from what you don't like and uh-huh. closer to what you do like. Mm-hmm. And that's what I find, that you say, I don't like that. I like that more.
Now, is this an expensive investment for the accountant to join the
organization? No, this is a good deal. It's $185 mm-hmm. To join for an annual membership. And then the CP is $95 for 8 hours and $45 for a half day. It's a cheap day compared to, let's say, the Georgia Society. And you actually get to see, you could speak with the guests. We had Hale Shepherd. I don't know if you all are familiar with Chamberlain Herdlicker. It is like the premier law firm in Atlanta. And, you know, you may have 45 people there, so you get to speak with him one-on-one, which is fabulous, which might cost you $350 per hour if you hired him.
So I want to get some practical counsel here.
All righty.
A company starting to grow, profitable, decent cash flow. When should they start looking at engaging someone on staff?
Oh, I think before you start a company, you should. Because once you start filling out the forms, just the simple, I don't want to bore anybody, SS4, to get your ID number, you're starting an entity. And you should know what you're doing. And in Georgia, you know, you'll be signing up for sales tax, which that's problematic.
Right.
And you've got income tax and, you know, all the property tax returns. So I don't want to bore everybody, but.
Well, no, this is really important to us because we're a growing company. We're doing well. We want to expand. So we're going to, you know, lasso AD here later on, get some money before we let him go. but no, you know, we have the bookkeeper, but we don't have a controller, a CFO, whatever, even part, and there's options for that too, right? Like you can get a fractional CFO.
I mean, you can decide to have somebody on staff, or probably like most people, you're going to go with someone who maybe comes in once a month. And,
right.
You know, I don't know if you're using QuickBooks. I will say, I have 30 years experience, and you can have somebody be a quote unquote bookkeeper, but they may not have any idea the tax significance of anything that you're doing, and so you may be paying more tax. Or the dreaded, when you come to do your tax return, how is that going to look? I mean, how much tearing apart are you going to have to do to create a realistic tax return?
So early and often is your answer to my question.
I would say get chummy with somebody that you have to like people's style. I mean, you have to like the way they do business. And a lot of accountants are very nitpicky. I focus more on the relationship. So
where can our listeners learn more and get in touch with you and have a conversation about this and hire you and some of your team to do this?
That would be fabulous. www.awscpa-georgia.org.
All right. So you going to hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Oh, definitely.
All right. Next up on Results Matter, we have with us from Club E College Park, Bob Johnson. You've been very patient, Bob. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Well, always interested in gaining more information on other business entities that are trying to help, entrepreneurial people. That's what we do for a living. So,
that's right. You have this concept of an entrepreneurial center, right?
That's correct. We started in 2006 with my partner out there. He was teaching a entrepreneurial course in ASU, and we kind of developed a curriculum for them called Ready, Fire, Aim, which is kind of the way entrepreneurs work. You know, they go throw it up against the wall and see if it works and then correct it later. But so we started out, and we had about 200 students in that program. And when they got through, they were all drinking the Kool-Aid saying, okay, now we understand entrepreneurship.
And off we go, right?
What's the next step we do? Because we don't know of any other opportunity to go and learn our skill sets that we need to be an entrepreneur. So we started the Club E Network, which was a once-a-month meeting that was free, and we encouraged entrepreneurs of all sizes and shapes, multimillionaires down to the kid just getting out of college, and try to get that networking, that synergy going to learn, you know, by osmosis from other people that have already made the 5,000 mistakes, and hopefully they would gain from that opportunity. And the once-a-month meeting grew into an opportunity for our Club E office, which is everybody was saying, well, I'm doing great, and once a month I'm meeting all these great people, but we don't have any place to go where we can't get in Starbucks. We can't plug in our computer because people trip over the thing. So, I mean, that's been the meeting place for entrepreneurs forever, Starbucks. So where do you go? So, I mean, need is created. So we created the Club E office concept, which is basically, it's really an entrepreneurial community. It's not a co-working place. I mean, we have all kinds of good ones in Atlanta. We have Rome and 200 Peachtree, and they're all friends of mine. I know what they're doing. But they're really providing a space for people that are existing businesses. We're kind of a preschool for wannapreneurs. You know, they come in and they say, well, I don't know if I can be an entrepreneur. So we have a personal profile that we have every member take. We say, okay, what are you good at? What are you not good at? and we kind of find out, you know, what they're missing. Everybody has some genius, but unfortunately, it takes about 6 skill sets to run a business, and most of them have 1, and maybe 1.5. So that's why we have 70-80% of our businesses failing, because they don't partner with the right people, a CPA or attorney or whatever, to get the right information initially, and then they go down the road and say, "Well, I thought that was the way to do it." So
now, what are these 6 traits?
Well, you basically, the basic business skills are, you know, it's accounting, or it's finance, really. I mean, it's finance more. What AD was talking about is trying to get your business so you're structured properly, that you can go in, and that's where you need the CPA to help you get that going. But finance and accounting are kind of little different areas, you know, but finance is one of them. Obviously, attorneys and legal side of it, marketing, you know, sales and marketing kind of tied together, but they're different animals, really. They're different people that do different things. And then you have the basically the skill set of, what are you developing? You're an operational person, or are you creating a product? Are you an inventor? We see so many of our inventors failing because they're missing all those skill sets. They test, they invent, but they never know how to commercialize anything.
Right.
So it sits on a shelf, and so we're there to what we try to do is, we have all our collaborators at Club E, and if they need them, we get them together with that. So we're kind of like Match.com for entrepreneurs. You know, we try to put the people that are needed in the space. We do charrettes where we get together in a meeting and try to find out how we're going to put this business together, and try to miss the mistakes that most of these entrepreneurs make.
And your focus is in the inner city, right?
We are. How we got started in College Park was Barbara Coffey was the head of economic development there, and she was actually with my partner in Phoenix, Arizona, developing the same concept for Goodyear, Arizona, which was a small town kind of like College Park. Mm-hmm. And when she presented it to her boss, who was the head of economic, well, he says, "It's not my idea, so I don't think it's too good." And then, unfortunately, we have people that live in the land of scarcity instead of, you know, land of plenty, and try to benefit from that. And so she got the opportunity to be head of economic development at College Park. And my partner said, "When you get off the plane, the first guy you call is my partner, Bob Johnson," because he's been trying to, I was trying right. to work something out in Roswell and Alpharetta, but there's no need up there. You know, there's no need for what we're doing.
Right.
And so College Park was a good fit for us. I didn't think so initially, but as we got down there and got the community behind us and the support that we have in the staff and in the city itself, John Lewis went out and got us a $150,000 grant, because I told Barb, I said, "Barb, if I come down here," when I looked at the block they were showing me on Main Street, there was 9 empty storefronts, and everybody was hopeless. You know, that was basically what you had down there. This goes back 3 years now. And I was walking around with Barbara. I said, "You really think we can turn this thing into an entrepreneurial center?" And she said, "No, she's got, you know, had the gumption to do it." So she went after John Lewis, got the money. So we looked for the right building. We found the biggest building on Main Street. We wanted to make an impact, be the catalyst for the city. And as we started renovating our building, it took us over a year to get this old furniture company building that had to be repurposed. It was the oldest entrepreneurial business in College Park, and the owner of it, the last owner of it, died in November of 2011, and his daughter didn't know what to do, and Barbara introduced me to her, and she said, "Gee, my dad would love to see another entrepreneurial business in here." So we renovated an 11,000-square-foot building. It's 100 years old, and tell me it was a pain all the way through. We replaced everything. I mean, it went from, you know, it's a Taj Mahal now for College Park. I couldn't borrow any money from the banks. I took it to the bank. I said, "Look," I said, "you know, I got $500,000 in this deal right now. I'd like to borrow some money." I said, "Well, you know, you have the most expensive building on Main Street, so we don't have any comps." Right. I said, "Yeah, so I am the comp," you know. So
they didn't go for that logic?
No, they didn't go for the logic. So, you know, bankers have their little book. AD can verify that. You know, they don't do it. So basically, I put $1 million of my own money, you know, cash, into the business to get it to where we want it, to make a statement, to create something that can be a catalyst for.
But this is a public-private enterprise, right?
Right. The public side of it came up with $150,000, and right. I came up with $1.2 million.
Right. That sounds about right.
So they got good leverage on their money, let's say that. But they were great. I mean, the city cooperated. They fully got it. You know, we're a small enough city in College Park that we can make a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have 13,000 people in College Park. You know, we have 12, 13% unemployment, whoever you want to believe. But we have, you know, 30-40% of hopelessness of people down there to think there's no opportunity for them. They're in an inner city situation. They have a lot of, you know, 80% of our single mothers or single dads that are raising kids. There's a lot of challenges there outside of, I mean, the social challenges are as great as the entrepreneurial challenges. And if you don't deal with those, you're never going to be successful in creating an entrepreneurial community.
Now, have you had any success? Is there any kind of sprouting there?
We've actually started four businesses in College Park. The challenge, as AD can understand, these are startup businesses. They have RFC. You know what that is, right?
What's that?
Relatives, friends, and charity. That's where they get their money. Okay.
We call it friends, fools, and family.
That's another version of it. We use our own. So we want to be a resource company. That's what we are. We're an entrepreneurial development center, a resource for these people to come to not only get the skill sets that they don't have, but we also are starting our own College Park Entrepreneur Fund. Every business that we start, I was mentored by an old Jewish attorney in Hartford, Connecticut years ago and took me under his wing, and he explained to me how the Jewish oxys work, you know, is where we take care of our own, basically, is mm-hmm. that we'll get you, Jaime, we'll get you some money, but you got to give back mm-hmm. when you get going. So I was kind of a Swedish kid in a Jewish environment. I kind of adapted pretty quickly to what they were teaching me. And so we kind of adopted that philosophy so any business who we start and we get them money or we help them, they got to basically tie 10% of their net profits back to College Park Entrepreneur Fund, which 100% goes back to helping other entrepreneurs get started.
Mm-hmm. So that way it can be sustaining?
That's right. We're organic growing our own entrepreneurs. So the first stage is Club E, which is the training center and the sorting center, I call it, to find out. Then we're doing an incubator, which is called Club E Factory. We're actually working with John Whelan to buy his 240,000-square-foot building down Sullivan Road. And we're starting we brought a business in that came in that liked what we were doing. Chuck Vollmer, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him or not. He wrote Jobonomics, which is 20 mm-hmm. million jobs by 2020. Go into the inner cities, try to find the one percenters and try to take them out of a life of crime and turn them into the right. business people. So we kind of adopted that philosophy, which is great. And so they have a company called eCycle, which we're starting an eCycle plant there in College Park. We expect to generate $20 to $30 million a year in it, and 10% of those net profits are going back into the College Park Entrepreneur Fund. So one thing all the Georgia Tech kids and all these kids that – one thing they need is money. So we get them every day. They hear about us virally. Hey, you go down there to Club E, you might be able to get some money out of these guys. And we get – and they come in all the time. I need $5,000. I need $20,000 and $15,000. These aren't ADs people. You know, these are people that have an idea and got to right. take it to prototype or whatever. But we love those people because they fit into our three-step process, which is, you know – figure out if you got a business, then go into incubation at a low cost, and then go into basically we're trying to develop a research park now with College Park. So those are the three legs. And all the time we're building human capital, which is really what we're all about. So
now are you finding that there's a lot of people that are open to this entrepreneurial path?
More than you'd anticipate, really. Since we opened, we've been open about 4 weeks now, and we've got about 65 members that are dues-paying members. The way we operate, we're a private club. It costs $50 a month to use our facility full-time in a co-working environment. Mm-hmm. And you have the collaborators there on an ad hoc basis as you need them. And so it costs about $1.30 a day to have an office. That's most entrepreneurs. But if you come down to our site, you'll see it's a beautiful Taj Mahal, basically. It's state-of-the-art. We have all fiber optics. We're the most technologically advanced building in College Park, and we're trying to set an example for the rest of College Park to say, here's what we are. This is what you can be, so go do it.
So now what made you in your career decide to focus all this treasure and passion and time into this cause?
Well, I think I started out as an entrepreneur. I never had a job. You know, nobody would hire me. That's number one, because most entrepreneurs are unemployable. You know, we like giving orders. We don't like taking them, you know, so we're not really good at jobs. And that's just over broke, by the way, so I'm not interested in getting a job and working. But we worked in the family business, which was a milk business. We had home delivery. By the time I was 17 years old, I was running the family business because my father was getting crushed by the, you know, the competitors like Cumberland Farms and all those people who didn't know how to retrofit his business and repurpose it. And so, you know, and I ran that for a few years. And by the time I was 21, I was, you know, a hardcore veteran entrepreneur that knew how to survive and do everything, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, and then I got under the, and when I was 23, I got into the investment business and syndication business. I thought I knew everything. I knew nothing, you know, so that's what you have to do when you're 23. You have to get that humility pill. And and so my Jewish attorney gave me that in doses many times, and I'd be talking to him, and I'd hear a click on the phone. He'd hang up, and I'd call back. I said, Charlie, I wasn't done talking. He says, I was done listening. So, I mean, that's kind of the – so you have to take everybody through that. So when you go through the process yourself, uh-huh. and you know what people need, you know what they need to, you know, keep them going, you know, that's why I'm doing it. It's basically give back. It's mm-hmm. what Charlie gave to me. I'm giving back.
Now, and are you finding that the young entrepreneurs that you're working with are open to that kind of tough love?
They are. You know, we do have a boot camp. I mean, we basically bring them in and say, really, I mean, are you ready to give up your 40-hour job and your check for 80 hours of no job and no security and no nothing? Unless you are, don't think about being an entrepreneur. The greatest thing we're doing right now is we're starting an American Idol for young entrepreneurs. We have everybody, you know, everybody has a talent contest today. We got sports. We got singing, dancing, right. everything, quilt making. I don't mm-hmm. care what it is. There are so many channels out there. So what we're doing now is we're starting a contest with the schools and the churches to bring in the top entrepreneurial kids that have it, and we're taking them from 100 kids down to 5, and then we started a copy center in the back of our business that the kids are actually going to run, and we're going to give them half of the stock in the company, and we're going to tell them just like I was told. Basically, you've got 5,000 shares in this company, but it's worth zero. It depends on what you're going to do. So we're actually, you know, we're walking the walk and talking the talk. We're trying to teach the young kids how to be entrepreneurs, just like I learned from my dad and in the business.
Your enthusiasm is so contagious. I mean, the energy level just went through the roof in the studio the minute you got on the microphone. What can we do to help? And by we, I mean us in this room and also our listeners. And where can we get in touch with you?
Well, our website is www.clubeatlanta.com. We're right on historic Main Street, downtown, 3707. We have an entrepreneurial-operated coffee shop in the front because every entrepreneur needs a good cup of coffee. And then we have our copy center, which we're doing with the YEOs from the high schools, and actually got Dr. Gully from Woodward Academy working with us, and we've got the Westlake kids from Sabrina Willis who's doing that. And so you got both sides of the track. And when you get that dynamic together, there's some really interesting things that happen. They both can learn from each other.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to try to teach them, those social skills and those business skills at a very young age. And that's how we build the people that AD will finance later in life.
There you go. So coordinates, website, phone number?
Yeah. It's clubeatlanta.com. And the phone number, 678-515-1270. And they can call us there anytime. We're there. We're open 8 to 8. On the weekdays, and we're open from 9 to 5 on Saturday. Sunday, we have special meetings or training or workshops or whatever. We rent out our facility to people that are trying to encourage entrepreneurial activity.
Well, you had me at coffee. And, Lee, I want to go down there and visit this place. I mean, just sitting down and hanging out with Bob for a little while has got to get you pumped up, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, you always talk about need. You know, AD was talking about how the pizza place is filling the need there, something where you can get a real pizza in 5 minutes. Well, there's no place you can get a cup of coffee on Main Street, College Park. So when I went there, my instinct of entrepreneurial skill said, you know, where's somebody going to get a coffee here? And I said, we have to put a coffee shop here. And we've had so many people that have stopped in. Our coffee shop was delayed 3 days because the health department has to get in there and, you know, they have to nitpick and do things. But we're finally ready to open it probably in the next couple of days. But so many people have stopped. Finally, we can get a latte in College Park. Oh, my God. We've elevated our, you know, our whole business. So our job is ready. We're trying to build an entrepreneurial city, and we're starting it with the Club E. Then we're going to go to the Club E factory, and the next thing is our Reach campus, which we're trying to develop about 300 acres with the city into a research and technology park. And we're working with some, you know, big names that we can't talk about today, but
we're going to make it happen. Next time. We're going to have you back. We'll talk about them next time. Definitely. And I've got it on the calendar now, Lee. Espresso at Club E.
Absolutely.
We're going to do the espresso tour.
Club E Cafe. I got to throw a plug in for my buddy Carlos Chavez, who's a 20-year entrepreneur running the cafe for us and training a lot of people that want to be in the restaurant business.
Yeah, so, that's wonderful.
So we're really incubating our own.
That's fantastic. Carlos, we are coming to see you, and we're coming to see you soon. Listen, Bob, you going to hang with us while we visit with our last guest today?
I sure am. We've got a lot of interesting people. people here. So
yeah, this has been a lot of fun. So Lee, you ready for the headliner?
Yes.
She's been very patient. I've seen her take a few notes. I've seen a lot of nodding, and I don't think I've seen any disapproval. Without further ado, please join me in welcoming to Results Matter from Giving Point, Miss Miranda Bryan. Hello there.
Hi, thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you.
Thank you.
I tell you what, let's start out with a little bit of a overview thumbnail sketch. Mission and purpose of Giving Point?
Absolutely. We are a 501c3 youth development nonprofit, and I'm loving all this entrepreneurial discussion because we seek to inspire and motivate young people to get involved in community service, and we hope to develop the next generation of social entrepreneurs through our program. We have about 7,000 students on our network right now. In 4 years, they've logged about 200,000 hours of community service, spun off 4 operating nonprofits, and created a $2 million impact here in Atlanta. So we're really excited to be here and share the good news of Giving Point, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, what was the impetus of this? How did it begin?
It's a great story. So our chairman of our board and founder, Derek Smith, was the chairman and CEO at Choice Point. And Choice Point sold in 2008. Mm-hmm. And he had some extra resources, of course, at that point. And he gave each of his young adult children, they were 18 and 22 at the time, he gave both of them $10,000 cash and said, I want you to invest this in an organization that you're passionate about. Take your social passion, put this money towards that. And he watched both of his children, though very bright, he watched them struggle. He watched them struggle to create meaningful connections with nonprofits. Had they told the nonprofits they had $10,000 to give them, I'm sure their experience would have been different. But he watched them struggle to really understand their own social passion. They had volunteered with him and his company most of their teenage life, but didn't really know what they were passionate about. And he started to do some research to understand what was out there for young people, for students, high school students, college students, to understand social issues, connect with nonprofits, and really get involved in a meaningful way that they were excited about, rather than student volunteers just being free labor. And he found there was nothing out there. And so he and some of the Choice Point executives got together and built a network called Giving Point. And it was an online network similar to Facebook. Students create their profile. They take quizzes to understand social issues. They take a Find Your Passion quiz to connect with different causes. And the end result, hopefully, is that young people will know what they care about and they will have fun giving back and become lifelong givers.
Now, when a kid gets involved in this, are they overwhelmed by all the choices? Like, can you look at it through their eyes? Like, what is their challenge?
It's so interesting. When students start the program, a lot of them think that they know what they care about and think they know how they want to get involved. It's animals and it's hunger and homelessness. And they get involved with hunger and homelessness and they realize that it's a huge issue and I can't change the world right now today. You know, students really want quick results. And so they start taking the other quizzes. We have a cause platform on our site. We showcase 30 different social issues. Students take these quizzes to learn about social issues, and you see them gravitate towards something that maybe is a little bit more achievable, something that's a little bit more local, something that resonates with them. I care about children, so I'm going to read to kids at the local elementary school.
So. Right. So there's opportunities like right in their neighborhood maybe that they weren't even aware of.
Absolutely. We want to connect them to volunteer opportunities, service opportunities. They're convenient and meaningful. We built this online network, and so many students got involved. I think we thought in the beginning, gee, wouldn't it be great if we had 500 students, and here we are 4 years later at 7,000. And we started to find that our students in lower-income communities were the most passionate volunteers. They said, we want to get involved, but they didn't have ways to volunteer. They didn't have transportation or resources. So we started to bring the volunteer opportunities to them through service learning programs at their school, which have been very successful. So
you work hand-in-hand with all schools, or how does that relationship develop?
We started working here locally with Atlanta Public Schools because they require students to do 75 hours of community service. And when you think about a student whose family might be struggling just to put food on the table, going out and doing 75 hours of community service is just another roadblock to on-time graduation. We wanted to eliminate that. So we work closely with several Atlanta Public Schools. We're in North Fulton County here in Atlanta, and we have some other smaller schools around the state that we're working with. So.
And what does that relationship look like? How are you working together?
We'll go in and just help the students track their community service hours. Right now, teachers are spending about 20 hours a week tracking by hand, if you can imagine that. So we want to make that easier for them. We'll work with the students to identify service learning opportunities on campus, whether it's planting a garden so they can learn about growing fruits and vegetables, whether it's doing a fundraising project, installing a recycling program. We really want to put the power of social change in the students' hands, and the schools give us a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And through this process, students come to us, they're using Giving Point to learn about issues, track their community service hours, and then these amazing young social entrepreneurs bubble up that say, you know, I have an idea to start a nonprofit, or I want to start a program at my school that really can have far-reaching implications. So,
and then you have the resources to help them.
We do. We actually just launched a program called the Giving Point Institute.
Mm-hmm.
The wonderful Marcus Foundation just gave us a founding sponsorship so we can launch a program for young social entrepreneurs. And in year one, we have a cohort of 20 students ranging from 14 to 20 years old, and they're tackling issues like civil rights in North Korea, ageism, education equality, environmental issues.
So they come to you with there's an application, they come with an idea, and then you decide to help them fund it to get it going?
Yeah, they self-select, and they go through an application process, and then once they're in the institute, they go through a 12-month program where we expose them to six areas that will help them in their entrepreneurial vision, like you discussed, Bob. And each month they'll meet with different business leaders here in Atlanta. So last month we had them at Hypopotamus meeting mm-hmm. with folks there about how to create a business plan.
Sure.
And next week we're going to have them at Goldman Sachs where they're going to learn about financing their plan and taking through public relations, public speaking, marketing, investor relations. And at the end of the program, one student will earn a $5,000 grant for their project.
Wow, how exciting.
Yeah.
That's so now where is Giving Point here only in Atlanta, Georgia, or are you spreading all over the place?
Well, our community outreach is focused on Atlanta, Georgia, because we're still a small team. We're young. But our online resources are available to students around the country, around the world, actually. We have students in the Philippines using our network, Texas, New York, Virginia.
So when somebody from the Philippines uses it, how do they benefit?
Well, students outside of Atlanta would be using our platform to track their community service hours. And take those quizzes. They can blog about their community service experience, post pictures of their community service experience. And the hope is that they will spread their love for service to their fellow students. But the reason they keep coming back to do all that stuff is our frequent giver program.
Mm-hmm.
So we give students points. Points when you take those online quizzes, points when you volunteer, points when you blog, points for all different sorts of things on the site. And then when you get to 500 points, you are then allowed to write a grant request to Giving Point, and Giving Point will then make a donation to that student's project or favorite cause.
Oh, wow.
So now everybody can give time, talent, and treasure.
Right.
You don't just have to have money in your pocket to give treasure. So
now, how did you get involved with Giving Point?
I've been working in nonprofit for about 5 years. I had been in sales and marketing and communications for about 10 years and thought, these are some skills I think that could benefit nonprofit. And I was looking for some meaning in my work. And so I worked for Big Brothers Big Sisters for a while and then came over to Giving Point as their chief fundraiser. And just in April was promoted to executive director. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
Well, congratulations on that. Now, are there business partners with Giving Point, or is it just relationships with schools?
Well, we have relationships with schools. We also have funding partners, sponsorships. State Farm is a wonderful sponsor. They're very passionate about service learning. And so they fund some service learning programs for us. And typical, like most nonprofits, we're out fundraising through grants from private family foundations, corporate sponsors. You think about State Farms, and I'll use them again. They really care about safe driving among teens.
Right.
And so they will sponsor the awareness that we create around safe driving and promote to teens.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for business partners who have a cause and want to help us get students involved in that cause.
Right. So now, what about the Club E? Like, he has a cause, young entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
How would you guys work together?
Well, I could see a wonderful fit in bringing some of our students in our cohort to meet with you all and get some feedback from you guys on the workshops we're providing. And are we doing a good job of equipping social entrepreneurs?
Well, we have several of our people that have nonprofits inside of Club E. They're very passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
One lady, Joanne Allen, started One Talent, which she took girls at risk and brought them in and tried to develop their other skills because they were a single parent or at foster homes or whatever and going in the wrong direction. Joanne's got about 30 or 40 graduates that she's taken them, and they've developed the singing skills, artistic skills, working in nonprofits. They're the most enthusiastic people we have in our Club E. They come in, they work with Joanne inside of our center. She won our business plan competition that we held with the City College Park, and so she has an office in our facility.
Mm-hmm.
And just the energy that she brings with all her girls is fantastic, really.
But Miranda, that's an example of how you work with other groups, right?
Absolutely. I mean, what we've learned is when I started this process, I was so amazed by what these students are doing. I mean, teen mothers who are graduating from high school on time and earning scholarships and starting their own nonprofits to help other teen mothers. I mean, just young people doing amazing things, and I was shocked. Mm-hmm. And I've learned to not be so shocked. Impressed, yes.
Right.
But I'm not surprised. And these young people, they really do want to change the world. And if you give them the tools to get started, they believe they can. And who are we to not foster
that? Exactly.
I want to get some of these kids in the studio.
I would love that.
Would you be up for that?
I could fill this room with some social entrepreneurs that are just amazing.
Yeah, let's make that happen. That'd be fun.
I would love it.
It's a good idea to do that because we got to go with the kids. You know, I sit on the board of Howard Preparatory Academy, mm-hmm. which is kind of kids from 4 to 16 that are all challenged. So we're trying to help them out and get their skill sets. But what you have to have is a meeting place like we have in Club B where we get these kids in there and see they're not alone, you know, mm-hmm. that they can find their passion, they can find a purpose. Mm-hmm. So it's all good. I mean, you gotta get them together, get that energy up, you know, and that's by themselves. They think they're living in this, you know, cloistered world that mm-hmm. they have this great idea and they can't develop it. But we just believe, you know, work with the willing and get people that are passionate about what they do and put them together and just see great things happen.
Bob, I'm going to put you on the spot and you should let us have one of our workshops at your facility.
No, absolutely. We got a great facility down there. We'd be happy to have it. We basically charge half to entrepreneurial groups that are nonprofit.
But for Miranda, you'll take care of her, right?
A special deal for my old boy Charlie that I learned through the discount.
So. Yeah, all right.
Well, she said she had a sales background. I think there's plenty of credibility there.
She's a closer.
She's going for the close.
Yeah, I just looked at your website, and you got a guy I know very well, Alan Tatel, on your board of directors.
Absolutely. I thought about Alan when you were talking about.
With Nora Mosley. They're a very fine firm, and he's a great guy.
He is. We have a wonderful board. This is a small group, but very invested, very engaged in these early stages. We're only 4 years old. So Alan Tatel has been the driving force behind our technology. I mean, it's completely customized. This point system, the tracking of the grants.
It seems like you have the gamification that keeps mm-hmm. it sticky. You have the sharing capabilities, and you're serving a need. Can the schools access this so that they don't have to handwrite this stuff?
It's a free resource to anyone.
Right, so a school can mm-hmm. use it so they can eliminate the 20 hours of handwriting the stuff, right?
Absolutely, and as long as we can get 10 people in a room, we'll come and do a training, whether it's 10 teachers or 10 students, we'll train the trainer.
Right.
And what happens is all of this activity that students are doing on the website, they're, you know, amassing those points, when it's time to graduate or time to apply for a scholarship or a leadership program, they can download that information to their civic resume, which mm-hmm. is a tangible record that we audit and verify of all their community service.
Wow.
And through that civic resume, we have 14 Gates Millennium Scholars in the last 4 years. And I don't know if y'all know about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funds a good through graduation scholarship for students at risk. And they can go to school forever through this scholarship. And we have 14 of those. They only give out 1,000 a year. So we're very, very proud of that.
That's impressive.
Heavily tied to service. So
now what's the future hold for you guys?
Well, we have a brand new website. It was supposed to launch yesterday, but we're going to be live with a new website on August 26th that will just look and feel much better than it does today. And we're going to add some new technology that I hope that we'll be able to license to business partners to track their employee volunteer service.
Smart.
It's a great idea.
And I hope to use those funds to sustain the organization. I mean, I don't want to start every year at zero and going to mm-hmm. funders for support. So we believe that technology can sustain us.
Now, if somebody wants to learn more, what is the website?
Sure. It's mygivingpoint.org. That's mygivingpoint.org.
And then in a couple of weeks or so, then it'll be kind of refreshed, right?
August 26th. It will look fantastic. It looks great today. It'll look even better on August 26th.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show. And thanks
thank
to
you.
All of our guests. This is Lee Cantor. For Stone Patent and all of our Business Radio X family, we will see you all next time on Results Matter Radio.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.